More than a week after the diplomatic row started between India and Canada, there is no evidence in the public domain yet to substantiate Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's allegations against India. External Affairs Minister S. Jaishankar isn't holding back anymore on the diplomatic confrontation after his quote-unquote political convenience can't determine response to terror comment at the UN General Assembly. He directly spoke out on Canada at a conversation in New York organized by the influential think tank Council of Foreign Relations. This comes at a time when Indian intelligence apparatus has been reiterating evidence it has on several alleged Khalistani terrorists in Canada. Mr. Jaishankar pointed out to evidence shared by India along with extradition requests.
Very frankly, what we told the Canadians. We told the Canadians that this is not the government of India's policy. Two, we told the Canadians saying that, look, if you have something specific, if you have something relevant, you know, let us know. We are open to looking at it. So, but to, you know, to understand the context of it, in a way, you know, because the picture is not complete without the context in a way, you also have to appreciate, Ken, that in the last few years, Canada actually has seen a lot of organized crime, you know, relating to, you know, the secessionist forces, organized crime, violence, extremism. They're all very, very deeply mixed up. So, in fact, we have been, you know, talking about specifics and information. We have actually been badgering the Canadians. We have given them a lot of information about organized crime leadership, which operates out of Canada. There are a large number of extradition requests. There are terrorist leaders who have been identified. So do understand that there is an environment out there. So that is important in a way to factor in if you have to understand what is going on out there. And our concern is that, you know, it's really been very permissive because of political reasons. So we have a situation where actually our diplomats are threatened. Our consulates have been attacked. And often comments are made about, you know, there's interference in our politics. You know, a lot of this is often justified as saying, well, that's how democracies work.
But if there are specific pieces of evidence that they provide, the government of India will cooperate with them in terms of...
I mean, look, if somebody gives me something specific, it doesn't have to be restricted to Canada. But if there's any incident which, you know, is an issue and somebody gives me something specific as a government, I would look at it. Of course I would look at it.
My question is just in continuation to the Canada topic that you addressed. What would be your response to the latest reports that have come in where it is said that intelligence was shared amongst the Five Eyes about the assassination is what they're calling it. And the other thing is apparently the FBI has told U.S. Sikh leaders that there are credible threats to them. So just wanted your reaction to that.
I'm not part of the Five Eyes. I'm certainly not part of the FBI. So I think you're asking the wrong person.
So is it time to put things out in public without making allegations? And if yes, what's the consequences of that? Joining us this evening, Professor Harshvi Pant, head of strategic studies at the Observer Research Foundation, former Indian diplomats Veena Sikri and Skand Tayal, Terry Milevsky, author of Blood for Blood, 50 Years of the Global Khalistan Project, journalist and commentator Daniel Bodman. Thank you all for being with us this evening on this conversation. My first question to you, Professor Harshvi Pant, the credibility of any investigation, sir, is depends on the unbiased nature of it. Given the diplomatic row and the strong statements that have been made on both sides, can we take any outcome of any investigation on face value? And is it time to put all information that's available in the public domain?
Well, thank you for having me. And I think it should have been done in the first place to begin with. If you are a strategic partner if you are a traditional democracy dealing with another democracy that faces similar challenging issues and challenging threats, then I think it behoves the governments that they deal with each other in a transparent manner, in a manner that is dignified, in a manner that is diplomatically acceptable. And I think the way Mr. Trudeau's government has dealt with this issue has certainly been very problematic from the very beginning. And I, as I think Dr. Jaishankar was pointing out, this is a long-standing story. This is not a story that begins with Mr. Trudeau's accusations. This is a story that begins with India's accusations, that India has been saying that, look, there are problems that are festering in Canada that has an impact on India. Please deal with them. And this is something that we have been, that Indian government, that India has been constantly telling Canada. And there was a almost a nonchalant attitude about it, as if it doesn't matter, as if all that matters is Canadian domestic politics. Mm-hmm. And therefore, the costs that were being borne by India were so high that India has to actually take some steps when, as a fellow democracy and a fellow strategic partner, Mr. Trudeau comes to the floor of his parliament and accuses India of something as dramatic as he did. Mm. So I think certainly for India, the time has come that Mr. Trudeau comes clean on this issue and makes it apparent. If he has any evidence, then I think that should be shared. And if the diplomatic engagement has to be relooked at, then perhaps it needs to be relooked at from the very basics. So I think we are treading on very thin ice at this point.
From that point, I take to the comment made by the External Affairs Minister in the UN General Assembly. And I take this across to Mr. Boardman. Sir, the Indian External Affairs Minister says political convenience cannot determine the response to terror. And this is a comment that has resonance from the global south. Do you believe that this standoff only reiterates perhaps that impression?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those things where it's like, it's hard to really determine, is he a terrorist? Is he just a secessionist? Is he enabler? Is he an extremist? It's going to be hard to make the comparison between him and Osama bin Laden or Qasem Soleimani, some hardcore mass murdering, constructed a mastermind plot we know of terrorist. Whereas Nadjer is just on TV advocating for extremism, supporting suicide bombing. And it's bad. I grant you, I'm not justifying his actions. But he's not Anwar al-Awlaki. He's not Qasem Soleimani. He's not Osama bin Laden. But he is a problem. Is he, some more of a Yusuf Karadawi type figure and sort of a someone who radicalizes people into becoming more and more extreme and that. So, yeah, it is a complicated thing, and I can understand India's perspective here, but these aren't in my view, the big questions we need to be focusing on. I mean, all countries are hypocrites when it comes to foreign policy. We all act in our own self-interest. It's what we have to do. It's what we should count on other countries to do. If we're going to have a real relationship with India, the best way to understand India is India needs to act in India's self-interest and will do what's best for India. Okay. So a good ally would say, here's a situation that's good for Canada, that's also good for India, right, and bring that together. Like, this is what we're talking about. When it comes to these sort of clandestine things, I think the real issue here is actually not so much what happened, taking that. It's how did we get here? How did the tacit endorsement of violence and extremism grow in Canada?
But as that is being said, when you're talking of intelligence collaboration, and I want to take this across to Veena Sikri, ma'am, when you're talking of intelligence collaboration, and today the intelligence apparatus in India is putting out information of potential links between Khalistani terrorists and groups like the Lashkar-e-Taiba, which in turn have connections with groups like the Al-Qaeda. Given that whole process, do you believe that India's stand on this or India's insinuations on this will cut ice with the Five Eyes?
It will cut ice with every country. We have seen, first of all, let me point out that it has cut strong ice with our neighbors. Both Bangladesh and Sri Lanka have strongly supported and said that they know that people whom they consider terrorists, the murderers of Sheikh Mujibur Rahman, some of the Tamil operatives from the LTTE, they're living in Canada. And all that these governments have been saying to Canada has been falling on deaf ears. So let me tell you quite clearly that A strategic partner, the essence of strategic partnership is cooperation. So if you have anything, if you think something has happened, Nijjar has been killed, and you have some evidence, give it to India. Our foreign minister has clearly said that he has received no evidence at all, and he's willing to examine any evidence, any credible evidence that he receives. But credible allegations of a political link is not evidence, number one. Number two, we have seen within Canada, the leader of the opposition, the premier of British Columbia, they're both saying the same thing. We have seen no evidence. How has the prime minister made such statements? Thirdly, these people, Nijjar and, of course, even Gurpatwant Singh Panon and others, they are Canadian citizens. Some of them are also American citizens, like Panon. How are the Canadian and American governments allowing these people to make statements against India, against India's territorial integrity, against the sovereignty of India? And we have friends, we are partners, we are strategic partners. So I think there's a lot of answers that have to be received from the Canadian government, that his own people are not believing him. His political ratings are at an all-time low. And he's using this to show him the connection between people like Nijjar and organized crime is very strong. I do not agree with Mr. Boardman at all. There are no good terrorists or bad terrorists. There are no degrees of terror. You know, so I think I don't agree. And we know that there's a relationship between them. Nijjar is known to have organized terrorist camps in British Columbia, training people. We know people are going there. We have given evidence ourselves. There are Interpol red corner notices against Nijjar. Right. There were, which the government completely ignored and gave him citizenship. So I think now, having given him citizenship, they should answer for all the illegal activities that he has been doing. And I think India is completely within its right to cut this umbilical cord between these terrorists living abroad and their assets in India, because it only gives them a linkage which shouldn't exist. They're not our citizens anymore.
As you make that point,
but now there's no interest in this. So let them look after it themselves.
As you make that point, in fact, in a program just before this on this very very channel, Cash Heed, who's the councillor of Richmond, had stated, I want to know what has been done on the Kashmiri, on the Khalistani, alleged Khalistani terrorists in Canada. What is being done on that bit? Mr. Milevsky, would that be a question that cuts eyes in Canada? What's being done to, you know, with the External Affairs Minister saying that India has shared intelligence and there are extradition requests that have been put, would that be part of the conversation? Is there a pushback on the government in Canada?
Absolutely. I think the Canadians have had it just as much as the average Indian has had it, with the permissive, supine, feeble response of governments of all parties in Canada to the Khalistani threat. This has been going on for 40 years that we've been just basically rolling over and letting it happen. And that is how we have come to the state of play today, where we have normalized in Canada what is obviously the glorification of terrorism and incitement to violence. This is not what most people think of as freedom of speech, the right to label Indian diplomats as killers and to show their pictures in their home, offer rewards for the revelation of their home addresses in case anyone wants to go get them. It's not what most people consider freedom of speech to glorify as a great man, a martyr of the Sikh nation, the Air India bomber of 1985, who took 331 lives. It's not as though Canada has rules about the glorification of promotion of terrorism, which other countries do. All over Europe, they've adopted new language. In Britain, they've had the anti-glorification of terrorism provision since 2006. Canada, by contrast, had a committee recommend such a change 8 years ago and did nothing about it. This feeble response, I believe, sickens mainstream Canadians just as much as it does mainstream Indians. Something, no solution to this morass that we're in now between the two countries can begin without an admission by the Canadian government that this has been going on too long, that we will start taking India's concerns seriously and doing something about the glorification of terrorism. Even if you say, oh, well, you know, changing the laws, that's difficult. How about using your freedom of speech, Mr. Politician? How about speaking up about these outrages? For example, the martyr posters of Dovinder Panat, the Kanishka bomber. What are we going to do about that if we're not even prepared to have the guts to come out and say, this is wrong. What about a diorama, a tableau, illustrating a life-size celebration of the assassination of Indira Gandhi in 1984? It's an endorsement of terrorism. It's an endorsement of murder. And Canada's going to do not even speak up about it? Never mind change the law to ban that sort of behavior. At the moment, Canadian politicians are failing us all, Canadians and Indians, by refusing to open their mouths and say, look, I know that this may cost me votes, but I'm not going to go to that Vaisakhi parade and smile and wave and hustle for votes while the parade floats go by, decorated with pictures of gun-toting martyrs and assassins. And, oh, the videos they produce about, oh, what a great thing. Nidjar was one of those. Look at Nidjar's own speeches. You may have seen him speaking at his Gurdwara, where he met his maker on June the 18th, at the Gurdwara, inside a sermon, if you will, from Mr. Nidjar, in which it's all about how what a wonderful thing we did assassinating in Indira Gandhi. And praise to the suicide bomber who killed the chief minister of Punjab, Beant Singh, in 1985. And praise for the assassins of General Vaidya,
strong
and so
comments
on,
that
and
you're
so
making,
on, and so
strong
on.
Statements
We've got
that
to say something about it.
Strong statements that you're making there. I want to go across to Skand Tayal, sir. Given that India's external affairs minister has now openly said that, look, what's been done about the extradition request, we can do something only if you share evidence. And given this row has played out for more than a week now, do you see it escalating further as we go along, or do you see some kind of de-escalation?
I think it will be a long process, but escalation may not be there. But the real thing is that the issue is not the whatever happened to Nidjar and who killed him, etc. The real issue is why Canada has become a sanctuary for terrorists and those forces which want to dismember friends of Canada. And this that Mujib's assassins are hiding there, LTT operatives are there, Khalistanis are there. So the good outcome from all these false allegations of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau may be that the Canadians themselves have a look on their own policies, on that why has their country become such a haven? And how can they allow these forces to openly attack and try to dismember a friendly country? So that is, they're a democratic country, and hopefully they will have internal corrections. But the real issue, and Canada can take action. We all remember when Americans requested that Huawei, Meng Wanzhou, that she should be arrested in Vancouver because there was some extradition request from America. Then Canadians arrested her. But if there are extradition requests from Bangladesh for the assassins of Mujibur Rahman, if there are extradition requests 18 from India for terrorists and assassins, then Canada does not take action. And this is what our Foreign Minister Jaishankar said, that some countries, the days when a few nations set the agenda and expected others to fall in line are over. That Canada cannot have this double standard, that if America makes a request, then they will arrest that lady, whatever may be her nationality. But if India requests, if Bangladesh requests, if Sri Lanka requests, then they will not take action. So perhaps this is the time for Canadian politicians, Canadian society to look at themselves. That's what have they become?
And I'm taking this beyond just Canada, sir, to Professor Pant. We're running short of time, but Professor Pant, quickly, do you believe that this could potentially be that moment where India pushes back, and it's perhaps a message across to the rest that, look, political convenience cannot determine the response to terror. And also, as the External Affairs Minister said in the UN General Assembly, that rule makers cannot expect rule takers to quietly just follow. Dominant nations can't just follow the agenda. I mean, the other nations can't just follow the agenda set up by the dominant nations.
Well, I think certainly this is a time when a lot of, you know, the rules that have been made in the past are in the spotlight, and the rule makers are also under the spotlight as to how those rules are implemented. So increasingly, I think Global South is asking, when you say rules-based order, whose rules are we talking about and how are those rules implemented? And I think increasingly, we will see that contestation being played out on global platforms, in bilateral relations. And I think in some ways, Mr. Trudeau has done a service To this conversation, because he has put the spotlight squarely on this very difficult conversation that at times strategic partners like India and Canada have not been having with each other openly. Okay. Now, I think by putting this out in the open, we are now having such an open debate. And I think this is quite liberating in some ways. Hopefully, Canada and India both will come to terms with it and will be able to take forward some positive actions on in this regard.
Quick responses first from you, Veena Sikri. Do you believe that the rest of the Five Eyes would potentially involve themselves in this, and this could perhaps redefine the way the world is approaching this problem?
No, I don't think so. I think that Canada has been quite isolated. They were isolated even in the G20 because they wanted to bring it up there. And even we know in the G7 meeting, which was after the G20 meeting, again, they tried to bring this up. And again, we do know that countries like France and Japan and Italy, they pushed back and they were not going to do it. In fact, this issue has probably divided the Five Eyes and the G7 more than any other issue. But I think this focus on truth and sincerity in bilateral relation, this is very important. You cannot call out certain forms of terrorism and allow other forms of terrorism to exist, and by their own citizens. And this is a point that we have to bring back to them, and we have to have very strong and serious conversations on them. Without any kind of proof, you cannot accuse a friendly country like India.
I'm completely running out of time. David Boardman, very quickly, do you believe that this will escalate further, or do you believe there will be a pullback? Daniel.
I mean, I see a bunch of outs that Canada can take and India can take to a productive bilateral relationship. I don't have any faith in Justin Trudeau in a coalition with Jagmeet Singh to take any of those outs. So I consider those two to be highly antagonistic, to have started the problem, to be driving the problem, and to continue to drive it until they're out of office.
Right, Skantayal?
So say that I don't think that any relief can come from this spin. Trudeau, The people of Canada will have to ask questions. The parliament will have to ask questions. Media will have to ask questions. So we should keep the pressure up, and through media, through all our friends, and the Five Eyes also, right. We should clearly explain to all our four other Five Eye friends that what exactly is happening, and India's security is threatened. So they should put pressure on Canada to take some action.
I'm completely out of time, Milevsky. Mr. Milevsky, final word from you.
I would say that we may have to wait for the next Prime Minister of Canada to really get marching down the path to a better, to bring this ship into safe harbor and move on. We need a reset, but it may take a new Prime Minister to do it. And the way we're going, the current Prime Minister's time may be up if he doesn't produce the goods and show us the evidence.
Well, the economic fallout will also be huge for that country. Thank you all for joining us and sharing your thoughts on this.